had a car like this in my life.
Stride was longer than anything I could make.
Hello?
Here, somebody, I'm here.
What's going on now, sir?
What? I'm in my yard right now, it's like...
Do you see him now, sir?
I see the damn thing, it's looking at me.
Uh-oh.
It's running around.
Okay, hang on.
I don't know what the hell it's doing out there.
Is he in your yard, sir?
Yes, I told you, he's in my yard.
Bigfoot, right? That's affirmative. He has evidence proving Bigfoot. He would like a police officer to come there.
And she says it looked just like Chewbacca from Star Wars. She says he was holding her baby the way a human would, but says that baby had a face only a mother could love.
You know, I don't think I'm ever going to get tired of the way that ends. Welcome to Bigfoot on Trial, where we discuss forensic science and its applications to Bigfoot investigations. We're going to discuss the best methods and practices used by crime scene investigators to document evidence and prepare it for presentation. I'm your host, David Zagan. I'm a current crime scene investigator, latent print examiner, and polygrapher. So let's go ahead and get this out there. I'm a believer, unfortunately not a knower like Bobo puts it. That's why I'm here, to analyze the evidence and talk about the best ways to document that evidence. Hopefully we can share and help each other out and together refine our investigative skills. So this show will not be focusing on critiquing other investigators, but we will be evaluating evidence and how to better collect it. Also, if you have any comments, evidence, or stories you'd like to share, email me at evidence@bigfootforensics.com. So before we introduce our guest, I just want to let you know that sometimes we're going to have guests on the show. Other times we might just be discussing different scientific literature that overlaps within forensic science and Bigfoot investigations. We're going to try to keep it interesting, that's for sure, and a little lighthearted. We don't want it all be super serious. We can still have fun and learn along the way. Everybody, welcome our first guest, Tim. He wishes to remain anonymous, so we're not going to give you his last name. All we know is he hails from somewhere down south Georgia, and he has a pretty awesome story to tell. Tim, why don't you go ahead and kick off this show with our very first interview and story. Tim, take it away.
So my grandma, she said, "Hey, Tim, I was thinking, why don't you and I go out and go camping together?" And I thought, with my Grammy?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I want to go camping with my Grammy? That's kind of weird.
Right.
And she said, "I have something I want to pass down to you before I kick the bucket."
Oh, that's grim.
And I thought, oh, my Lord. Obviously, the first thing I thought was, why can't you show me why we gotta go sleep in the woods together? I mean, that's starting to get a little like how them stereotypical things they say about them Southern peoples. And, you know, I don't want nobody saying I went camping with my granny, so we're gonna have to do this on the download.
I get that.
But, any rate, I did agree, and we took this trip up to the North Georgia Mountains, and she said that it was something that she had seen as a little girl with her daddy, and she wanted to pass it on to me.
Interesting.
But she was wondering if, you know, we were going to have the same experience. Now, mind you, I didn't know what she meant by any of this.
Right.
But we got there. We took our truck up there, and we loaded it up with all the extras, and we got out there, and unfortunately, I had to carry everything because, you know, Grammy.
Right.
And a couple of times I had to carry her, which is kind of awkward if you want to know the truth. But I mean, it wasn't too bad. I mean, I guess the whole thing is I was really interested in to know what she thought she had to pass on when that was so important.
Mm-hmm.
So we get out there and we set up camp, and I had to set up a cot. You know, imagine trying to carry that in. But I had to set up a cot for Grammy because she don't sleep well. Well, I thought she wouldn't sleep well on the ground, and I was just trying to be a good grandson.
Right, right.
But so the first night she said, "We're going to have to cook something, and it's going to have to be, you know, like really smoky and, you know, something with a good smell on it that can go off into the woods." But I was a little nervous because I thought that maybe we bring in bears or something like that.
Right, right.
And she said, "Don't worry about that. ain't no bears in this area. And I thought, how's that possible? You know, we up here in the North Georgia mountains, we know there's bears everywhere.
Right, they're everywhere.
So she said, not here.
Huh.
And she was serious, you know?
Serious.
So I put the chitlins on, and I mean, I got them up and good, and we even let the smoke go a little bit longer, and I kept asking her, you know, what's going on? When are you going to show me? And she says, well, it's going to be a minute. And I didn't know what she meant by a minute. I thought, like, you know, 60 seconds, maybe here comes something. And I thought maybe she had brought it with her because I kept looking around and, you know, she brought her freaking purse out into the woods. That was kind of weird, too.
Yeah.
But she said she had something that, I don't know. It was really confusing. So there we are eating our chitlins, and we hear this noise, this grumbling noise. And she says, now, son, you know I'm not her son. She says, now, son, I'm going to need you to go down that trail right there, and I need you to check it out. But
what?
Don't worry. Don't be scared.
Okay.
And I said, all right. So I wasn't scared. Well, that's not true. That grumbling I heard, I swear I was going to come around the corner and see that big old bear right there.
Yeah.
And it was going to make me its dinner.
Uh-huh.
But instead, when I came around, man, I don't even know how to tell you what just happened. But when I came around, I heard all this rumbling and thumping. Man, it sounded like people was throwing down. But when I come around that corner, I see all this dust flying, and I see these two big, giant, hairy creatures,
oh my God.
They're, like, wrestling.
What?
They look angry. There's all this grunting and growling, throwing each other around, dust everywhere.
Good God.
And I look over to the side, and I see this freaking armadillo tied to the tree.
What?
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, are they fighting over the armadillo?
No.
What is this? What are those things? I mean, what the hell is going on? And all of a sudden, they just kind of stopped, and they looked up at me. I thought, oh, my God, I am going to die right here. And about that time, this freaking little possum come running out. It was scared to death. I'm guessing it was trying to get away. But the only thing I could think of was, I'm going to kick that possum right over to those things, and they're going to eat that. They ain't going to eat me, right? So I kicked that possum over there, and it made this little eek. And they grabbed that possum up. And then I swear to God, I thought I saw one of them kind of crack a grin. And I thought, now is my time. And I turned and I went running back to Grammy.
Oh my God, when
I got back there, I was so freaked out. I started telling her everything that I had just seen. And she was like, oh, calm down, calm down. They're friends. They're friends. And I said, but they was fighting. They could kill me, too. And she said, no, no, no. It's okay. It's okay. Just calm down. Go invite them over for some chitlins.
Oh my God.
I thought,
okay.
What?
All right.
Invite them over for chitlins?
Killing
I can't do that.
Come on now.
They got a freaking armadillo tied to a tree, and they got a possum that I just kicked over to them. I don't think they need nothing else to eat. Plus, I kind of like my chitlins.
Oh, geez. Oh, my God. That is some story. So, Tim, tell me, what was it that you think you saw when you went around the bend on that trail? What exactly do you think that you were seeing? Tell me more about that.
If I was from a distance, I probably would have thought it was two bears fighting. But you could clearly see that it looked like two giant Andre the Giants, all covered in hair, just kind of wrestling. I mean, when they stood up, when he got that possum in his hand that I kicked over to him, when he stood up, you could clearly see there wasn't no snout on that damn thing like an old bear, right?
Right.
I mean, and when he stood up, let me tell you something.
I mean,
that thing was almost as high where he could just grab the top of my deer stand and grab my feet, you know? But, I mean, I had to say at least it was 8.5, 10 feet tall. I mean, but the other one was kind of shorter. And I think, you know, I don't know. I think what the most confusing thing about that whole thing is that freaking armadillo that was tied to the tree.
So what did y'all do next? Did y'all go check it out, or what did you do?
Well, Grammy kept going on about that, about how they was friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me one more time to share the chitlins, but like I said before, Those are mine. I mean, we lured them. They did their job.
Right.
They brought that scent up in the air,
uh-huh.
And it brought them on in. But the truthful with you, I didn't sleep too well. I mean, Grandma nodded off fairly early, but, you know, I figured while I'm out in the woods, I'd have myself a drink.
Mm-hmm.
But I found myself inching closer and closer to that tent, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I went into the tent, I zipped it up, and there's Grammy in there. She got her feet propped up on the cooler. She done brought it in there and put it up on her cot so she could have her legs up in the air. I thought that was kind of inappropriate. But I just crawled up in my sleeping bag. And, you know, in the middle of the night, I heard this commotion again. But it turned out it was just Grammy trying to get readjusted.
Mm-hmm.
And that snoring. Oh, my God. There was a couple times where I thought that there was some grunting coming from outside and a bear might have been there. But it turns out it was just Grammy having the night terrors. Anyway, during the night, I thought I smelled something kind of funky. So I kind of poked my head out of the tent, and I realized that I didn't smell it outside. When I went back in the tent, I smelled it again. It was like this weird smell of, like, Doritos kind of hanging in the air. Now, we didn't have no Doritos out there, so I don't know where that smell was coming from. But I was kind of hoping that, you know, something like processed, you know, them processed kind of foods that maybe the Bigfoots don't like them. I mean, Bigfoots don't like them. So I was hoping that maybe if I unzipped the tent just a little bit and I kind of turned the little fan that I brought, you know, kind of pushing the Dorito air out. And I thought, well, it's twofold, right? I get the Dorito air out. And also, maybe it keep them Bigfoots away. So nothing really else happened during the night. We woke up. I cooked us some breakfast. I had some sausage links that I brought. And I'm not going to lie, in the back of my head, I was wondering if there was going to be any Bigfoots coming to that, but I didn't hear nothing. And basically, it turns out that the only event that we really had was that evening.
Mm-hmm.
I did keep looking back towards that bend, you know, down that trail, and I almost went back around there just to check it out, but I hadn't been back since. Grammy and I, you know, I asked her a bunch of questions, like what was her experience and stuff like that, like what made her bring me there. And she didn't really have any good answers, only that she wanted to share that part of her life with me. And to be honest with you, it was an experience, and I'm kind of glad she did. But at the same time, I got these weird pictures in my head. You know what I mean?
So one of the biggest problems that we have in law enforcement is eyewitness testimony. And I'm guessing the same thing holds true on Bigfoot investigations. And, no matter whether you're working a crime or a crime scene or a major incident or something traumatic such as a Bigfoot sighting, if you have an eyewitness, they need to be spoken to properly and approached properly. So how do we do that? But first, remember in the trailer, if you haven't listened to that, I mentioned that for each episode that we do, I'm going to have a document section on BigfootForensics.com. Just go there, go to the top tab, go to documents, and when you open it, you'll see episode 1, 2, 3, whatever. Just open it up, and it'll have stuff for you to follow along. So for this particular thing, don't forget the link will be there. This is a, I'm going to read just a brief opening of an article entitled Eyewitness Memory is a Lot More Reliable Than You Think. It's written by John Wickstead and Laura Mix, published in the Scientific American, June 13th, 2017. So go to BigfootForensics.com, go to the episode documents page, and you'll find a link with the entire article there. Crime scene people, I know you don't have to interview people normally to get your scene started, but Bigfoot investigators, I think some beginning principles here might be pretty awesome. So this is a direct quote. The ability of a person who witnesses a crime to later pick the perpetrator out of a lineup is atrocious, right? The answer seems like a resounding yes if you consider some well-known and rather disconcerting information. Eyewitness misidentifications are known to have played a role in 70% of 349 wrongful convictions that have been overturned based on DNA evidence. And then they have a little thing that says, in parentheses, so far. Psychologists have learned a lot about why such errors happen. With surprising ease, for example, participants in a memory experiment can be led to believe that they saw a stop sign when they actually saw a yield sign, or that they became lost in a shopping mall as a child when no such experience actually occurred. In much the same way, an eyewitness can be led to falsely remember someone committing a crime that was actually committed by someone else. So obviously the title of the article is conflicting with the paragraph I just read. The article goes on to address some of the issues with memory, namely that it's malleable, easily shaped and formed if directed or influenced in the wrong way. But it also cites research that if questioned correctly, one might be able to avoid this pitfall and get reliable recall from someone asked about the incident. The article then goes into a brief synopsis of some of the ways memory can get contaminated, slash influenced, if you will, and further makes reference to police lineups. So how do we go about interviewing the witness without influencing their answers? But for those of you who aren't interested in how the police lineups used to be conducted, I took some excerpts from the Innocence Project and I posted them on the document section for this episode. I also put their suggestions on how it should be done, but let me tell you, after reading their suggestions on how it should be done, that's exactly how I was trained how to do it almost 18 years ago when I started. But they're there for your... for your perusing, if you are very interested and you want to read it. So for the Bigfoot investigators, now we need to go over how to talk to our eyewitnesses in the woods. And I think a good place to start would be the cognitive interview. The cognitive interview is actually pretty cool. I've also posted a video in the same spot as the Innocence Project documents, so you can actually watch a cognitive interview being done. Obviously, it's not me, but it has some good explaining about what's happening along the way. So just a reminder, when I reference different articles or things like that, the links are going to be on the webpage if you want to read the entire article, because I'm not going to read the entire thing. But this is from simplypsychology.org. It's entitled The Cognitive Interview. It's by Dr. Saul McLeod from 2021. And basically, the cognitive interview is a questioning technique used by the police. Well, he says by the police, it's really by anybody who's interviewing. This is also taught in the loss prevention sections for retail. So in his paper, he references, it's spelled Gieselman. Et al., which means and others, from 1985. He's the one who developed the cognitive interview, along with the others, as an alternative to the standard interview. And basically what he's saying is, because our memories are made up of a network of associations rather than discrete and unconnected events, there are a number of ways that these memories can be accessed. The cognitive interview exploits this by using multiple retrieval strategies. So basically, you can hit it from different angles. So reporting the event from different perspectives. Sometimes the witnesses are asked to report the incident from a different perspective, such as, what do you think an eyewitness standing over there would have seen? Or what do you think the criminal may have seen? So I'm guessing in this case, what else do you think the Bigfoot may have seen? Another approach is describing the event in several orders, asking them to recount the narrative backwards. That seems to be a fairly good way of doing it. It takes a long time. You have to be very patient. But before I go any further, let's not forget that while we're talking to these people, you're asking open-ended questions and you're listening. And also, don't forget to ask them, and this is one of the things in the cognitive interview as well, asking about their other senses. What were some of the things you heard? Did you smell anything? Ask them, what did the air smell like at the time? You can lead that far. Don't say, did you smell anything rotten or did you smell anything like that when you're talking about looking for a Bigfoot? Because, some of that lore out there is that he smells like a skunk or he smells like garbage or he just smells bad. So don't be leading and ask, hey, while you were standing there, did you smell anything that smelled really bad? Don't do that. That's leading. Only ask, so if you closed your eyes and you were to sniff the air, what did that smell like? Right. Okay. So Those are some of the ways that we can go forward. Now, some of the things that we also need to take into consideration are how people retrieve their information during a traumatic event. Because remember, everybody is not the same. Take me being a police officer for 18 to 19 years versus someone else who's, you know, had an office job and never experienced anything traumatic. Right in the heat of the moment, during a traumatic event, we might remember different details from one another. And it's usually based off of experiences and, things that have happened in our lifetime. But there's also something else, and it's something that we need to take into consideration. So people extract information really just by getting the gist or the underlying meaning. And there's a word that we're going to throw out there. It's called schemas, okay? And it sounds difficult at first, but really how it's described is it's like a mental unit of knowledge. Unfortunately, a schema is or can be determined by social values and therefore prejudice. They're capable of distorting unfamiliar or unconsciously unacceptable information in order to fit in with our existing knowledge. So basically, at certain times, if you're in a traumatic event and you can't recall certain things, your brain is actually going to fill in that portion that you think you saw based off of what you think you should have seen. For example, if you were in a store and an armed robber comes in and they point a gun at you. Now, one of two things are going to happen, right? You're actually going to be able to get a good physical description of this person standing in front of you, or you're going to go tunnel vision or what they call weapons focus on this weapon pointed at you, and you're not even going to see the person that's holding the gun. However, those prejudices or basically the event that you're experiencing, it might be a preconceived notion in your mind that certain types of people commit these types of crimes based off of television, the way you were raised, all different reasons. So, unfortunately, even though you're not consciously trying to distort the truth or intentionally lie about what you saw, because most people just want to be helpful, and unfortunately sometimes they feel embarrassed that they can't remember everything, you know, in such an important event, they want to be helpful. So they'll try to fill in that blank with what they think should have happened. And that's where a lot of those horrible eyewitness testimonies come from, as you can see the problem. They're not doing it intentionally. It's just one of those things, and it's horrible. But that's why the cognitive interview is so important, and knowing about these things ahead of time, it can help mitigate it. Just being aware of it while you're talking to somebody and looking for those clues, because it could be something as simple as Tim saying that he's afraid for his life as he comes around that corner and he sees two big hairy Andre the Giant things. And then he goes into quite a detailed description about everything that he saw. And that includes an armadillo tied to the tree, one of them smiling or grinning at him, they're rolling around, dust is flying everywhere, he sees a possum. So, I mean, that's a pretty good clue right there, right? Okay, so let's get this out of the way. I have several tanks in this room. I don't have an actual studio, and the tanks have various types of dart frogs. Occasionally, you're going to hear something in the background that sounds like a frog in the jungle. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm tired of trying to edit that stuff out, so it's just going to be what it's going to be. So apologize for that, and there we go again. Take a listen to that. It's actually kind of cool, but when you're trying to do something like this, I guess I'm just going to have to let that frustration go. So either Tim is embellishing the story a little bit, you know, to try to be more funny or try to be more helpful, or it's just outright lying. But it also could be the other thing. So keep this in mind when you're talking to your witnesses. This other thing is important. We don't know everyone's experiences and everything they've been through in their lives. For all you know, you're talking to a combat vet, somebody else who's been through very traumatic experiences on a regular basis. So when they round the corner, their first instinct is not to flee, but to evaluate the situation. Law enforcement officers, combat veterans, people in the military, people who've been through many, many traumatic experiences over and over and over, don't do the automatically flee, zone out, do the weapons focus or the tunnel vision thing. We may be able to remain a little bit calmer to help make a decision on what to do next. So keep that in mind when you're talking to people, see if you can get a background, but don't be automatically judgmental because you don't know what's gone on in their lives. Remember, and this is the number one thing for interviews, no matter whether you believe them or not. Always, 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 law enforcement people, Bigfoot investigators, don't care who you are, show empathy. It'll get you a long way. Okay, so let's assume we've had success with Tim in showing us where we want to go set up a perimeter for our crime scene, and things seem to be looking up. I think we're going to discuss that on our next show, and that will be about securing the scene. But let's go ahead and end this with a dad joke.
Ooh.
Right? What do they call Bigfoot in Europe? Big meter. Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed our first show. Don't forget to visit BigfootForensics.com. Obviously, it's the first show. It's going to be starting out a little slow as far as evidence and pictures on the website. But don't forget to visit, submit your submissions, email me, tell me your stories, tell me your experiences, send in those photographs, and let's do some analysis of evidence together. And until next time, this was Bigfoot on Trial.
She was holding her baby the way a human would, but said that baby had a face only a mother could love.